I grew up an ethnically and racially Jewish child adopted by an evangelical family, knowing I was Jewish. So the coming together of Passover and the Christian Holy Week, or the last week of Lent, has always fascinated me. Historically, symbolically, and theologically, it speaks to something deep inside, with a meaning beyond either Jewish or Christian doctrine. The eight-day festival of Passover is celebrated in the early spring, from the 15th through the 22nd of the Hebrew month of Nisan. This year it begins on April 14th and continues till the 21st. It commemorates the release of the Israelites from slavery in Egypt. And by following the rituals of Passover today, we are able to relive and re-experience the freedom that my ancestors gained as Jews fled captivity. Briefly, the religious version of the story says that after decades of slavery to the Egyptian pharaohs, during which time the Israelites were subjected to backbreaking labor and unbearable horror, God saw the people's distress and sent a man named Moses to Pharaoh with a message, "Let my people go. Send my people forth so that they may serve me." But Pharaoh refused, and God sent upon Egypt 10 plagues, afflicting them and destroying everything from their livestock to their crops. And we have various understandings today of what these plagues were and how they happened. And there's actually a few fairly good scientific explanations. But this is the religious explanation. And at the stroke of midnight on 15 Nisan in approximately the year 1313 BCE, God sent the last of 10 plagues on the Egyptians, taking away their firstborn. And when he did so, he spared the children of Israel. He passed over their homes, and there you have the name of the holiday. Pharaoh's resistance was broken, and he virtually chased his former slaves out of the land. The Israelites left in such a hurry that the bread they had did not have time to rise. 600,000 adult males, almost as many women, and again almost as many children, left Egypt and began the trek to Mount Sinai in the Promised Land. About 1,346 years later, a young Jewish radical, the Rabbi Jesus of Nazareth, met with his disciples to eat a Passover meal on a Thursday in the city of Jerusalem. They broke bread and they prayed together. And Jesus, who knew that his triumphant entry into the city a week earlier would not stop the growing movement to end both his ministry and his life, warned his followers that the end was near. Later that evening, they went to the Garden of Gethsemane to pray. And after praying to God to have this pain taken away from him, if possible, Jesus was seized by a large crowd armed with swords and clubs, sent from the chief priests and elders of the people, and taken before the Jewish high court. He was sentenced to death and then sent to the Roman prefect Pontius Pilate, who approved his crucifixion for the crime of breaking Jewish law. Pilate himself could find no crime against Rome, and according to the Christian Bible, historically washed his hands, which is where we get the phrase, actually brought out a bowl of water, dipped his hands, and said, "I have nothing to do with this," publicly. On Friday, Jesus was crucified between 2 common thieves, taken down and laid in a borrowed tomb. And on Sunday, the Christian Bible says that Jesus rose from the dead in body and in spirit, was seen by various people, and then ascended into heaven. So standing here as a Jewish Unitarian, how in the heck does this speak to me? How does this speak to you? It speaks to me as a UU, and as a human being, and as a person of faith. Now, some of you may know the celebration of the resurrection of Jesus wasn't always called Easter. The name probably came about as a fertility cult of the Germanic goddess Oster, or Easter, was overwhelmed by Christianity. That may be where we get the images of the rabbits and the eggs, the custom of handing out sweets. And a lot of Unitarian ministers preach on this every year, and I swear I'm not one of them. You know, we all know that Christianity survived because it was good at adapting itself to the local customs, as long as they didn't impact or change the Christian message. So that's not what I'm here for today. The Easter and the Good Friday and the Passover I care about have little to do with candy or Easter bunnies or Seder. I care what they have to teach us about suffering and life, death and spirit and triumph. It is easy to talk about marshmallow peeps and Easter hats and chocolate crosses. But I would rather engage in the harder task of talking as you use about the power of the idea of life after death, resurrection, of personal redemption and of salvation from the things that destroy us. Passover is the celebration of freedom after captivity, Easter of life after death, of peace after pain. In both cases, it is the depth of suffering which make real the joy of relief. One cannot exist without the other. I do not know if the man Jesus suffered and died to pay for my sins. But I do believe that some measure of pain is present and essential in any spiritual journey. I am not a sadist or a masochist, but any spiritual guide or guru or teacher who tells me that there is an easy path to wisdom and joy and they are about to sell it to me? Really? It isn't that simple. Any spiritual teacher who says that those who do it better get blessed more, they worry me. What about those who are doing the best they can and still cannot prosper? What about those who are actively suffering from disease, grinding poverty, or war, or despair? What does the prosperity gospel say to them? This world is broken in many places. Human beings live without clean water or sufficient food. Companies have created slave economies in foreign countries and a nation of wage slaves in our own. Women are trapped in sexist culture. Refugees suffer without homes. Others live under harsh regimes without a Moses in sight. Young black men are shot in the streets and young Muslim girls on the way to school. Suffering unites us across a world which is both smaller and more separated than it has ever been. So when we see the suffering of the man, Jesus of Nazareth, the man so much like us that I hear myself in him, when he stood in the garden at Gethsemane and asked his dad to make it stop before it ever began. When I see his suffering, I see the suffering of all of us, of every kid who fell down hard and asked his mom to make it please stop hurting, of every parent who did without, of every young woman who had her heart broken, her life broken, every victim who cried out in pain and shame and rage, and every perpetrator who caused that pain in an effort to stop their own or just to survive. When I meditate on that cross, I see beyond one young carpenter, beyond one radical first century Nazarene, one Palestinian man, one dying Jew. I see the suffering of the web of life which holds us all together. I see the pain and brokenness which call me to do more, to be more, to love more. The God of my understanding, which some may see as spirit of life or spirit of humanity, is not just the God of happiness and prosperity, but the God who is also there on the days when all seems lost. The God who calls me to do the hard work of justice and repair. The God who reminds me that suffering is real and cannot be avoided. The God who allowed the cross to happen is the God who calls me to work toward a world in which it can never happen again. The God of Passover, who saved the Hebrew firstborn, is also the God of Good Friday and crucifixion. And the God of crucifixion is the God of resurrection. Black and white, good and bad, and all the spaces in between. Though Jesus was crucified alone as a criminal, his pain and suffering have meaning for us here today. His suffering is the suffering of the parents of Trayvon Martin, of the victims of the Sikh temple shootings in Wisconsin, of Muslim refugees and Ukrainian Jews. We are connected in a web, reaching forward and backward through time, from the cross to the internet, one cloak, many threads. And as I think about the time between Passover feast, crucifixion, and resurrection, I am forced to consider the time between Jesus' death on the cross and his supposed rise on that third day. That empty space, that dash between death and life. Christians do not lament the death of their God. The holiday we know as Easter is not a graveside ceremony. It is a celebration of life, of what happens after an ending, of going on, but not immediately. In all of the stories, there is a gap, a time between death and rebirth, a time to sit with the ending which has just happened, to grieve the loss of what was and what might have been. 3 minutes, 3 hours, 3 days, 3 weeks, 3 years. The amount of time is immaterial. It is the time we need to be done, whatever that is. The time we need to experience ourselves as those who have lost before we can begin again. When the ending is a good one, there is a great temptation to remove the pause altogether. I am jubilant as I finish my career as a student, and I rush to begin my first job. I discover I'm going to be a parent, and I rush to furnish a nursery. But how do I honor my own journey? How do I recognize my own learning if I do not grant myself time to think through my experience? My time as a working person will only be stronger if I understand and am ready to leave my time as a college student. My maturity and readiness to parent depends on my willingness to accept the ending of my own childhood. The metaphors found in the resurrection stories tell me that there is a space between what was and what will be, and that space is needed. Make no mistake, I can go without that space. I can plow forward time and time again, dragging the rattling remains of all my endings behind me. I can live in what was. I can wrap myself so tightly in the would have, should have, once was, that the ghost of my former life walked beside me everywhere I go. But that is not healthy. That does not free me to engage in a free and responsible search for truth and meaning. That type of life ties me to a point in time, It ties me to a definition of myself that may be long out of date, overwritten. It ties me to the cross, to death, to endings, and not to the resurrection that could come next in my life. But once I take that space, once I digest, then what? I am ready for that new life, that resurrection day, that Easter. The poet Rumi says this of resurrection: nothing can be undertaken until a pain, a yearning, and a love for a thing is awakened inside a human being. Without pain, one's endeavor will not be easy, no matter what, and whether it be about this world, the hereafter, commercial, regal, scholarly, astrological, or anything else. Our body is like Mary, and each of us bears a Jesus. If we experience birth pains, our Jesus will be born. But if there is no pain, our Jesus will return to his origin by that hidden road whence he came, and we will remain deprived. I do not need to believe the notion of Jesus as the only son of a specific God who dies as a perfect sacrifice for the sins of the world to see the insight and relevance in the story. The sacredness of every person, the song of their life, the depth of their pain shows me again and again the meaning of the Easter story. The call to allow myself endings and rebirths over and over again, and to welcome the experience of others as they do the same. This shows me the meaning of the Easter story. I cannot stop the wheel of time or the change of seasons. I cannot stand in the heat of August and make it be cold again by screaming, "It's winter, it's winter." I can't make myself a child again by refusing to let go of my toys, or bring back a spouse who has died by holding out my wedding rings and saying, "Look, I'm still married." But I can face my endings. I can go into the tomb for each of them and put on a burial shroud. I can spend 3 days or 3 months or 3 years or 3 minutes feeling the tension of that which I have put away and that which I have not yet become. And then I can rise, I can roll away the stone and emerge as a new creation, a part of a story of change and survival that has been around for over 3,000 years. Winter will end. Spring will come. We will rise. Alleluia.